Talking today with Michael Kelsey of the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. Michael, here we are in the final days of 2016. You've just wrapped up a whole series of fall meetings. You had one set of your fall gatherings, but also a set of VFD informational meetings. How'd things go?
It went really well. Attendance was fantastic, especially for our fall gatherings. We did six this year. In the past several years, we've done four. And just from an efficiency standpoint, this year we decided to do six. We actually decided to do that early on in the year to do that. And it really paid well for us. Attendance was fantastic. Discussion was good. Lots of questions. We started the first part of November, so we were had a few of them before the election and then obviously finished up after the election. Big conversation piece was 777, both before and after, but also a lot of other issues that are going on in the cattle industry, and then, of course, the market. And the market has bounded positively here in the past couple of days, so that's been good. The VFD meetings were really good as well. What we, I think, in Oklahoma have been fortunate is we've had a lot of VFD meetings, not only from OCA sponsorship, but a lot of veterinarians have hosted for their own clientele. Other ag organizations have also hosted VFD, and that's beneficial to producers, to livestock producers. So those meetings were well attended, had some excellent questions, some good discussion on preparing producers, just getting ready for this veterinary feed directive that's coming January 1.
It seems like for the cattle industry, you know, we've got relatively few drugs that a lot of our producers are using. I mean, compared to, say, the pork industry or the poultry industry.
Yeah, it's very species specific in terms of that. And it's also, quite frankly, producer specific, because we know that depending upon what sector of the livestock industry and the cattle industry you're in, you may or may not use as much or as many different types and classes as antibiotics. Certainly from a cow-calf sector, mineral is a big issue, a big question on, especially when you look at CTC and some of those types of products. From a stocker perspective, there was that antibiotic, especially when you're receiving those calves, feeding those antibiotics to get those cattle up and running good and so forth. Again, there's processes and ways to make sure you're in compliance and so forth. And I think if producers have a good veterinary client-patient relationship, that's 80-90% of the battle right there. And a lot of our guys already have that. So there's going to be some growing pains. We're going to work through this. But now, one thing I should mention is, and what we'll continue to watch is on the federal level, FDA is not done with the Veterinary Feed Directive. They're going to continue, especially because of the outside interests that are pushing on them, to continue to look at ways to monitor antibiotic use. And so what that means is injectables. They're on the chopping block, if you will, next, or on the table next, as well as other types of antimicrobials that we use in our industry. So we want to make sure that we're presenting a very positive message on that federal level, working with NCBA and so forth at the FDA and USDA level.
Right. Going back to fall gatherings, you mentioned that 777 on the minds of our producers out across the state. What, you know, as you heard the conversation, as you got the feedback from cattle producers, what's the takeaway from this, you know, rather substantial defeat that the ag industry, you know, absorbed?
Yeah, the biggest question is okay, so what are the victors? What are they going to do now? And obviously, none of us really know for sure. What we would anticipate, though, is they've got good momentum. Anytime you have an election like this and you win by 20 points, and that's what it was, 60-40, we got beat pretty good. Do they have that momentum? Are they going to continue that? And we're going to play like, yes, they are. They're going to keep coming. In fact, at the last fall gathering we had in Tulsa, what I encouraged folks to do was all of that passion that we exhibited in sharing our message for vote yes, we need to continue that passion of sharing our message. Now it's just not a vote yes. It's just defending agriculture. So continue to share those posts on Facebook. Continue to share information in church and at the grocery store. And when you see folks, your family members that are urban oriented, continue that process, because we know those adversaries, HSUS and those folks, they're coming. And they were victorious in Massachusetts. They've been victorious in California. It's going to start coming towards us in the middle. So we've got to continue to be vigilant and watch what they're going to do. We're going to watch very closely on the legislative session to see if there's any bills that are dropped. I'm positive that we won't see much movement in terms of a bill being passed, but just a bill being dropped is threat enough. And so we're going to watch that very closely, defend the cattle industry very, very admirably and very forthright in that sense. So we'll be watching.
You think that, you know, for OCA, is this particular, you know, campaign cycle that you've walked through with State Question 777, is this kind of maybe raised the level of awareness of the need to be very transparent with our consumers?
I think so. I think a lot of us thought this is, especially early on, this is pretty easy. We're in Oklahoma. Right to farm, that should be something that will happen, you know, pretty easy. Then the cattle market kind of came along and really kicked us in the shins, really hindered our ability to raise some funds in the cattle industry, just to be very honest, because the cattle market was so difficult there for a while, still is, although it's, again, rebounded positively here most recently. But I think it was a wake-up call for us to understand that what our adversaries, all they have to do is confuse and make people ask questions. That's and just say, wait a minute, I thought, and boy, then you've got that voter, that consumer on the road to your side of the message. And so they don't have to, our adversaries, HSUS and those folks, they don't have to tell the truth. They don't have to be factual. They can just confuse and scare. And if they and they're very good at that, and they I think that vote proved it. They are very good at confusing and scaring folks. And so all the more reason what we've told cattle producers, look, if you're a cattle producer, you ought to be a member of OCA. If you're in the agriculture industry, you ought to be a member of the organization that represents your philosophies, represents your sector of the agriculture, whether you're growing crops or livestock. It's vitally important that we pull together. And then I would go a step further and say, ag organizations, y'all need to be working together, because while it may be maybe the question, specific question is farrowing crates for swine, next question or tomorrow will be cattle feedlots. So we need to be working with our swine producers hand in hand, arm in arm, to defend those scientifically sound processes and management protocols. Very important that we do that, and more important as we continue to move forward.
Right. Let's kind of look forward now, obviously wrapping up 2016, early 17. You've got a new wrinkle as far as your meeting schedule is concerned. In January, you're going to have what you're calling a winter policy meeting.
Yeah, we're really excited. January 24th, it's our winter policy meeting. Our board at our November board meeting, and the exec committee had been talking about doing this for some time, and so they ratified it at the November board meeting. January 24th, we're going to have a winter policy meeting. Policy, especially on the state and the federal level, is ever-changing. And so as an organization, we need to be flexible to that to be able to respond. And one of the ways you do that as a membership organization is pull your membership together and say, what are the policies that we need to be working on this time period? Traditionally, we've only developed policy at our July, at our annual convention. That's been very good. Convention is growing. It's getting active, and it's getting harder to set aside that time to do that. Plus, with that flexibility that we need, our leadership said, let's have another policy development process for our membership. We're going to do that in the middle of the year as opposed to July, so it'll be in January. So we're anticipating that. We're really excited about that. It'll give us an opportunity to develop policy right before the legislative session, which will begin there in February, as well as it'll be an opportunity to look at proposed policies and ideas for the NCBA annual convention, which will be the week following. So a great opportunity for our membership to evaluate what's been proposed, as well as to finalize or tweak some ideas that we'd like to move forward, depending upon what the political and the policy environment is. Again, allows us as an organization to be more flexible, to be more responsive to our membership, as well as whatever the political environment is. We're really excited about it. We encourage OCA members to participate. It's a one-day deal. It'll be real intense for that one day, but we kind of expect that. We're going to come up, roll our sleeves, work hard for the day, and then go home and finish chores that evening. But we want to invite all OCA members to participate in that process.
What are there two or three things out there you think, you know, that this mid-year meeting might actually address regarding policy?
Yeah, that's a good question, and really hadn't thought much about that at this point in time, because we're looking at the logistics of the meeting itself right now. Now, knowing what's coming in the legislative session, boy, if I had a crystal ball, I know there's a lot of people that would love to know that, because we've got over 40 new elected representatives and senators who are going to be coming in, two new leaders in the House and Senate. Both of them are very friendly to agriculture, and we look forward to working with both of them and what they expect of agriculture. So I think it's really hard to tell right now. We do know Education is obviously going to be a very high talking point, a very, very important issue, as well as the budget. And so because of that shortfall that they're walking into, what's oil going to do? How's agriculture, the agriculture economy, going to respond? Are we going to continue to tick up, if you will, in terms of commodities, pricing, and so forth? You know, if we knew those things, we might know a little bit better about what specific policies. Now, we have been reached out to by a few of our state cattle association sister organizations anticipating NCBA and some policies. So we'll be able to put those in front of the membership and say, hey, the North Dakota stock growers have brought this idea. They've actually one that's been sent to us. How do we feel about this? Do we want to support it at the national level and so forth? So that'll give us an opportunity to do that. But I look forward. That's going to be a great meeting. Look forward to conducting that.
One thing that kind of was unfinished business from this past legislative session, because we basically had a veto by the governor on feral hogs, and so some policies been put together by Department of Ag, Department of Wildlife Conservation. You know, are you feeling okay about where this thing now stands?
That's a great question, and I think in talking to our members about feral swine, obviously a big concern, continues to be a big concern. From a policy standpoint, it appears that we have two good processes in place. And what I mean by that, ODAF and the Department of Wildlife, Department of Agriculture and Department of Wildlife. We need to let the – what we're getting from our membership is we need to let those develop. See how they go. They're not end-alls. That's clear. They're not silver bullets. That's even more clear. But they are excellent, in our opinion, good steps forward in trying to maneuver forward and handle this issue. The House had an interim study over the summer. I thought it was very telling for the Noble Research Foundation. Mr. Gaskamp, Josh, would stand up and say, eradication's impossible. We're just not going to eradicate them. We'd love to do that. Don't get me wrong. But because of surrounding states and what they do with feral swine, just because of the nature of the beast itself, eradication is not feasible. So what do we need to do then in order to manage and move forward? We think we have two good steps to start that process. Again, they're not end-all. But let's let this process work. Let's let our Department of Ag and our Department of Wildlife. We've got a brand new commissioner over at the Department of Wildlife who's very friendly to agriculture. He was raised in agriculture, so he knows the challenges. We've got a great friend in the Department of Agriculture with Mr. Reese, Secretary Reese. So I think we have an opportunity to move forward, see how this is going to work, and then we can positively address that maybe at the next session or through the rulemaking process, depending upon whatever we need to do. That's what we're hearing from our members.